Welcome to the Sunday night There's a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. We will now introduce our speaker, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Please help me welcome Veronica C., a compulsive overeater from New York.
Hi, everybody. I'm so happy to be here tonight. It's an absolute pleasure. And what I would like to do is, and of course, I'm Veronica C., recovered compulsive overeater from New York. And I'm going to go through a bit of my early life, and then I will talk about how the disease became reared its ugly head for me. And then I will talk about my recovery. So, my early life was filled with just a lot of discord and trauma, not unusual for many of us that are in these rooms, but for myself, I grew up for the first 3 years of my life, I grew up with my mother and my father and some of my siblings. I was the oldest of seven. And one night I woke up 3 years old, and we were living in Chicago at the time, and to the sound of crashing against the wall, which was dishes being thrown, and then my father subsequently picking up a knife and holding it to my mother's throat. She was screaming for me to go to the neighbors and have them call the police. So in my little footy pajamas, 3 years old, and I remember they were footy pajamas because that's what I wore when I was little, I ran to the neighbors, and apparently I must have done something right. I don't know. I have no memory of what happened at that point. But I do remember my uncle, which was one of my mother's brothers, coming and taking us away in his car, and I would not see my father again for a long time. And even then it was very brief. So we went to live at my mother's parents' home, which were my grandparents. And my grandparents were very, very loving and kind. But it was a household that had a lot of discord between my grandmother and grandfather. So I remember that I was 17 years old before I actually heard them speak to each other. They never spoke to each other. And because there was a lot of something that I never understood, even to this day, but there was obviously something that my grandfather had done that my grandmother never forgave him for. And I grew up understanding also that when you become angry with somebody, that the thing to do is to hold a grudge, like you don't really talk to them anymore. And I remember months at a time that my mother and my grandmother would not talk to each other. So even though I had feelings that were going on, because I would sense things that were happening, but it's like there was never anything spoken. And at the same time, I had very loving relationships with all three of them. They were very kind to me. They were very loving. But I think that they were quietly simmering with each other. And, you know, as a child, I did pick that up, and, you know, through osmosis. And a lot of people think that kids don't pick anything up, but trust me, I did. And I just knew that, you know, there were certain things I was going to do where I would never think of asking my grandparents to be together in any way. It just wasn't an option. I was very used to that way of living. At the same time, I grew up in a household that was a very Catholic household, and we had a big in all of the rooms in the house. I lived in a fairly big house, and every single room had different statues or different things and plaques on the wall. We had a big oil painting of the Last Supper in our kitchen. And we were all church attendees. I had received all the sacraments. And so, and I loved confession, because as a little girl, even though I had to pretend and make things up, which is what I did a lot, because I didn't understand. I mean, unless I thought I had killed somebody or maybe heard a bad word, I would think that maybe that was a sin. I didn't really understand what it was all about. But I love the idea of the pomp and circumstance of church, because it was very quiet when we went in, and all of my siblings and I, you know, we would all be lined up, you know, very coiffed and very quiet, and we would just pay attention to what was happening. My brothers were altar boys eventually. I mean, we were really churchgoers. So eventually, what ended up happening was my mother was dating. And at the time, I didn't know what it was, what it was called or anything, because eventually I think somebody would come and my mother would leave and she would be all dressed up. And in my family, it's very important to look a certain way and to be thin. That's very critical in our household. Well, in the family dynamic, not just our household, but across the board. And so I saw all of this, and I remember that, you know, well, she would come back home, you know, and everything would just sort of be normal. And I think she had like maybe, I think about three, I don't know if they were serious boyfriends, but they were boyfriends that she went out with. They never stayed over, anything like that. And, it could never be possible anyway in that household. It was never going to be. Not that she would want that, but I'm just saying that, you know, there was a healthy respect for the boundaries of her parents too. So as I grew up, I was about 8 years old. And then one evening, my mother had taken us to the movies. Actually, it was just me. And my father was there. And I was flabbergasted. I didn't know why he was there, what was going on. I thought they were back together again. Nobody spoke to me about it. And my mother got pregnant again. And she succeeded in being pregnant, I think three or four times after she had left my father. So she was seeing him on the sly. She would get pregnant. Nobody ever talked about it. She would just go have the baby, bring the baby home. The baby would be loved, and that would be it. So, you know, it was a strange childhood in that way, but it was a loving childhood too, but it was very, very strange. I mean, to be living in a household where people weren't speaking with each other periodically or at all for a long time. So, I remember just the first thought I even had about food was I was probably about 10. And I remember watching an uncle. And by the way, my family was prominent, the outside family and my grandparents in that community. And so there was sort of a face that people had to put on for them. And I remember this uncle coming and washing his car in our yard. And I remember I was eating a sandwich because I didn't have any weight on me until much later in life, until I was like, mostly until I would say it was probably around the time that I had my daughter when I became pregnant. And I'll talk about that in a moment. So, and I remember him shaming me for eating a sandwich and telling me I was going to get fat and that I shouldn't do that. And I don't even know what else he said. I just know that I was devastated. And I remember walking away crying, feeling so ashamed, because I felt that was the intention, was for me to feel shame. I know that now, but then I didn't. I just knew the feeling. And so that was my first feeling of hooking up with this idea that there's something about food that is not right. And roughly from that time on, I paid a very careful attention to my appearance. And of course, I had that all really supported by family members because that was important to them. So I wasn't standing out in any way. I was behaving normally. But it was very important for me to be very meticulous about how I looked. And at about the age of 14, I remember that I started to have all of these different situations that happened. Like I had an uncle, the same uncle that came and rescued us, was also an uncle that when he had picked me up from school one day and brought me home. And when he brought me home, he put his hand on my knee and he said, "You know, you're a very good looking girl. You're going to be a beautiful woman." And I just remember feeling very, very like I just had to get out of his car immediately. And I couldn't wait to get home. I never told anybody that, but that began of a series of things that happened in my life, which really had to do with men that, and this is no reflection on men in general, it's just my experience, you know, different things about men really wanting me to kiss them, or, and these were my mother's boyfriends, or, you know, even worse than that, and wanting to do other things and me refusing. And when I told my mother, she didn't believe me. And I loved my mother. My mother was a great person, but she was very, very, when it came to men and when it came to relationships with men and obviously with others, she had a problem. She had a real problem. So my life continued on and I started to have racing thoughts about making sure that I looked a certain way when I left home and I went to college. I just, because I was a very good student to begin with. I was a stellar student. And I just made sure that whatever I did was perfect. I wanted it to be perfect. And if I got a C on something, I remember going up to a professor and I started to cry because I had never gotten a C. And he said, "Well, this is what you can do." And he said, "Don't worry, it's going to be okay." So I had all of these, you know, very, very warped and delusional concepts about what it was to be in the world because I had to be perfect. So, and it's not like anybody told me this. This was all things that I had gotten, and I had what I believe is arrested development, and meaning that, you know, from the time I was 3 years old and I had experienced this and many other things, there's a part of my emotional development that just didn't, I was still young inside. I was like what they call, it's like a, you know, an adult head on small shoulders. So I really had to try to figure things out in my own way because I didn't have anybody talking to me about it and I didn't think I could talk to anybody. The next thing I think that happened, aside from having all of the racing thoughts about food and looking good, is that I started to go to hypnotherapists because I thought maybe I needed to be hypnotized to lose more weight. And I was not overweight at that point in time. And I remember one of them saying to me, "Well, I don't understand why you're here. Why do you want to lose more weight?" And I said, "Well, I just think it's that another 10 pounds would be helpful to me." And I had gone through a summer without eating. I didn't really think about it. I just felt I liked the lightness of being without food in me. That feeling of lightness was sort of like, I guess you could say, a high for me. I really liked it. And so life went on and I got married to a very wonderful man. And I ended up getting pregnant. And when I was pregnant with my daughter, I became quite ill. I couldn't eat anything. I couldn't keep anything down, even anything to drink. And so I ended up losing more weight. I was 25 pounds underweight. So they put me in the hospital to try to like help me get some nutrition. I had a really hard time. About the seventh month, I was able to just slowly begin to eat. And when I did, I just started eating. And I remember that the doctor had said, don't worry about what you eat because you're eating for a child and you're underweight. You've got to get weight on you. So I did. I just ate all the things that like I would never have normally even thought about because food thoughts were not something that I had prior to any of this. But I started thinking about mashed potatoes and gravy, and then I'd want like a heavy piece of meat, some sort of steak or something like that. Anything that would, and all kinds of sweets. So I just ate and ate and ate. And I remember I got up to 240. By the time I had her, the doctor said, don't worry, you're going to lose it. So I nursed my girl solidly for 10 months, and I lost most of the weight. I didn't think about it because you can eat 5,000 calories and still not gain weight. So as a matter of fact, I lost it. So I was feeling fairly good. And then once I let go of the nursing with her, I didn't let go of the food. And I just wanted to eat. And I remember my husband saying, oh my gosh, you're taking so much food. And he wouldn't normally comment about that. But at that, a couple of times he did. And I thought, well, yeah, well, what's wrong with that? Because I still now remember I had lost weight, so I was fine. And then one day I woke up and I realized I had gained 40 pounds. It felt to me like it just happened. And I think it's because I was wearing mom clothes. I was in my disease and I didn't know it. And I started going to the pain ways, and I started going to hypnotists again, and I started going to people that I thought, when none of this worked for very long, I thought, well, I need to go to people that write books about this and that are masters at this. So I saw Atkins, and I saw Gary Noll, and I saw another guy, I can't think of his name, that was an expert in anorexia and bulimia. And of course, nothing worked. So I, after a while of just going through all of this, and then I found, I found OA in my younger years, but I wasn't wearing any weight. I went through the steps. People weren't talking about the big book like they do now. And I just couldn't understand all the God stuff because I had become more spiritual. I had left Catholicism because I didn't like the dogma, although I liked the pomp and circumstance. And so I just decided to follow more of a spiritual life, which is believing in something metaphysical. And I studied metaphysics. So all this was coming about. And, you know, I was gaining weight, not able to lose it. And finally, I just said, you know, even going to OA, I was going to Manhattan and Brooklyn meetings, and it seemed interesting, but I didn't think it was for me at that point again, because I just couldn't get it. So we moved. I went to Saratoga Springs, and I went to the meetings up here, and they seemed like really nice people. None of these people were bad people, but it just seemed like a nice coffee clutch. So I then went to some more pain ways up here, again, feeling frustrated. Why in the heck? I'm so smart. I believed I was, right? I'm so smart, right? I've got this education. I've got a career. What is wrong with me? Why can't I figure this out? Well, why can't I figure it out? That's the issue. You know, I wasn't going to be able to. I was self-reliant. And one day I was so upset with being in any kind of program or anything. I just said, I'm not going to do this anymore. And I just started to eat, and that was it. I said, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to live my life happy, thinking that I was going to be happy doing this. Well, I wasn't going to be happy because I started to gain weight. And I got to 320 pounds. And I was just, you know, I liked fashion. I liked wearing clothes. I couldn't do it anymore, you know, the way that I wanted. And I felt like this disease brought me to my knees. And so one day I felt like this was spirit. It came to me and just took me to the computer and had me put in OA, and up came Vision for You. And then up came Scottsdale. And I just said, I'm just going to try it. I'm just going to try it. And when I went into that first meeting at Vision, I felt like, oh my God, I know what they were talking about when they say that, you know, you've come home, because I never understood that before that. But I felt like I was home because it was spiritual. It was really dealing with the disease. And they were reading out of a book that I never had understood, like I was understanding it there. Then I went to Scottsdale and other meetings that were very similar. And I got a great sponsor, and the weight started to come off. And I had lost like 70 pounds. And I was still continuing to lose weight. And I just knew that the recovery that I had gotten in this program is something that I could not lose. So I really paid attention to the steps, because I really got that what it is about this program, because I didn't understand that I could have a psychic change. I thought that was an interesting thing in the book, and I wanted to believe it, but I was just doing whatever my sponsor had said. And so I was going through the steps with her, did my fourth step, and I got up to step 10. And the way I do it is with another person so that I can hear myself. And, you know, I didn't understand exactly what I was supposed to get out of step 10, but I got relief. And the more I did it, the more that I started to see what was underneath it, because it was like a big brick wall. And underneath that wall were the layers of all the feelings that I had probably been suppressing for years and years and years. And there is more of a perceptual change that came as I started to go through those layers and started doing the 10 steps daily. And so I no longer was just ignoring like a tiny, I don't know if there's such a thing as a tiny resentment, but what I would have considered maybe like something I wanted to ignore, like, you know, somebody maybe that I believe was slighting me, I might consider, well, that's not a big deal because that person, I don't even know that person anyway. But now I understand that that is 10-step material, because that is something that I will wear. I will put it on my body in a minute. And I know that it's all these resentments, all of my fears, all of the things that I have not dealt with over the years, they will come back in a heartbeat. So the main thing that I had to concentrate on was allowing God to be in my consciousness. I had to embody God consciousness. And the way that I did that was through doing 10, 11, and 12. And right now I'm going through another fourth step because I wanted that experience. I've been in recovery for 2 years, and I wanted the experience of being in a different place and doing the fourth step. And it's a whole different experience for me. And I'm totally grateful to this program, because this is what brought me closer to God. And I thought that I was a spiritual person. You know, I have Buddhist flags in my home, and I have paintings of certain things. Big deal, right? That's on the outside. But I did not embody the God that I needed to embody. And I made myself separate from God. And that's when I realized that I was separate when it came to the food. And I realized that through doing the steps the second time, actually, meaning not the first time years ago, but the second time where I got recovery. And, you know, when you know you're separate from God, it's when you have discord in your life and you're trying to solve it. Like, I know now that I have to turn to something greater than me. I still have to use my thinking mind for some things, but I can do that in conjunction with my higher power too. It's not just me alone. And now I have a community of people that I can turn to. I have a sponsor that I love dearly. And I don't have to worry about talking to people about the God that I love and that I believe in now, the spiritual essence of what I think everything is comprised of. I don't have to be afraid of that anymore. I don't have to be confused about it anymore, because I can look outside and I can see God in the trees. Even on this computer, I see God. I see God everywhere, because everything that is man-made is created from an inspiration that was God-inspired, I believe. So everything in my life is about God. And that's really how I'm working on living my life. Doing this inventory that I am doing right now is very critical to my ongoing recovery. And I recognize that not sponsoring is a danger. So I sponsor, and I believe in sponsoring people. I believe in really taking somebody quickly through the steps, because I want them to have an awakening too, like I had. The spiritual awakening that I had cannot be bought. It can only be done through working with the steps and bringing God into my life. So today, I am really grateful. I'm working on letting go of resentments and understanding that I was wearing those resentments. I was wearing them. That's what I was doing. I'm not going to be invested in that anymore. And I don't know how much time I have left.
5 minutes.
Oh, I do have 5 minutes. Okay. So it's really important for me to work this program in a way that I plan my food every day. So I know what I'm going to eat in the morning for breakfast. I know what I'm going to have for lunch. I know what I'm going to have for dinner. I know what snack I'm going to have. And I also know that it's important for me to have those foods in my home, because not having them is not an option. I can't be willy-nilly about this. I have to be clean about it in order to be recovered, in order to stay recovered. And because I also have the twist of the mind, I have an allergy and I have a twist of the mind. And the twist of the mind was operating in me when I was a young girl. I know that even though I wasn't eating over it, it had me in my mind perseverating on things that, you know, were absolutely insane. So the insanity was clear, and I know that now. But I also know now that because I grew up in my father was an alcoholic. I don't know if I mentioned that, but I grew up in the first 3 years of my life in that alcoholic environment. And any pictures that I have even found or have left of my father, you always see beer bottles everywhere. It's like beer bottles on the coffee table, beer bottles beside him. And so, you know, the food was my beer. The food was my beer. And whatever it was that happened to me with my arrested development, this is what I'm uncovering probably for the rest of my life, because I needed to grow up. I needed to be, you know, I couldn't fight it anymore. And I couldn't be a child having a temper tantrum and not wanting to, and only wanting things to be my way, because my way was very important, especially the more I was in this disease. I became very controlling around people and situations. And I still have to get called on it, you know, because it's still easy for me to do that. But I catch myself more often than not now, and I recognize what's happening. And because I often do a pause and pray, or a pause and think and then pray, I bring God into that scenario. Because as soon as, like I said, as soon as there is difficulty or discord, I know that that's a red flag for me. So I pay attention to that. And today I'm all in the program, and I'm very grateful for this program. I'm very, very thankful to be here, and grateful that I've had this beautiful group of people that get me here too. So with that, I'm going to say that I'm going to close.